All right, so here we are again. Can you introduce yourself again? We've just had you, but come on.
Yeah, I'm Bob Martin, founder of Object Mentor.
Excellent.
I'm Chad Fowler, CTO of InfoEther Incorporated.
InfoEther, that's interesting. What do you guys do?
We do a variety of things. We have been a Ruby consultancy probably longer than any other company on the planet. We also have a product called Indy, which is in alpha at this point, which does private social networking on the edge. It'll take a long time to
that
describe.
That sounds like a marketing term to me. We do that a lot at Microsoft. On the edge, huh?
On the edge of the network, decentralized.
Awesome.
Through privacy and social networking.
Interesting. So now you mentioned Ruby. So, you know, we're talking about dynamic languages. And I know this gentleman over here is a fan of static languages, but also dynamic languages.
Yes, yes.
So I really wanted to talk a little bit about, A, for those in the audience, what's the real difference?
So, like, definitions.
And then we can talk.
All right. So a statically typed language is a language like Java or C Sharp or C++ in which you must declare your variables and you must declare their types. You must declare the signature of every function and every method and the types of all their arguments. And most significantly, a statically typed language is a language that achieves polymorphism through inheritance.
Okay.
And I would say that that is actually a definition of explicit class-checked languages and not statically typed languages. But I think that's really what we're talking about here anyway. Most people, when they have the statically typed versus dynamically typed debate, they're talking about the Java, C-sharp, C++ languages of the world, which are what Bob just described.
Mm-hmm.
So what I am opposed to, and I've actually been in that camp myself, so I kind of understand it. But
yeah, you've been a Java programmer. Were you a C++ programmer?
No, sadly.
No? Well, I was. And I've also been a Java programmer and a C-sharp programmer. And for years and years, I defended the moral honor of static typing. And I'm going to do that here today, even though my mind has shifted somewhat.
Right.
Interesting.
And I've done the same thing. But that being said, I don't believe that static typing is inherently bad because there are implementations of it that are good.
Okay.
OCaml, Haskell. What I believe is that explicit class-checked languages are counterproductive.
So now I'm going to start at you right away. Because how can you say that the static checking in C-sharp, Java, C++ is bad when it obviously prevents a whole class of runtime errors? I cannot call a function with the wrong type.
All right, that's a good point. So what you've done is you've stated a fact, which is, you know, something that's kind of irrefutable. It does prevent a whole type or a whole class of runtime errors. I would argue that it does that at a cost, which is quite larger than the benefit of preventing that class of runtime errors. So, for example, you say that these sorts of languages implement polymorphism through inheritance. Inheritance, as the industry, the object-oriented programming industry, has come to believe, at least on the leading edge, is not generally a good way to model the world. The world is not made of hierarchies. So if it's true that you have to model things in terms of inheritance to achieve polymorphism, you're actually immediately stuck into a paradigm that doesn't really make sense in terms of the way people think and systems can evolve most cleanly.
Mm. So now I'm going to answer that question a little differently.
Right.
Because, yes, dynamically typed languages implement polymorphism without inheritance. But the thing that bothers me about inheritance is not that, you know, it models the real world less effectively, that the real world isn't made of hierarchies. What bothers me about inheritance is that it is the strongest coupling there is.
True.
When you inherit from a base class, you inherit everything in that base class. And you inherit everything that base class talks to and touches. In C++, the chain of pound includes can go on forever. In Java, the chain of imports, although not quite as dramatic, is still very heavy. On the other hand, when you don't inherit, you can cut those dependencies off very, very quickly. So from my point of view, one of the real benefits to dynamic typing is that you can get all the polymorphism, all the flexibility, without the cost of inheritance. Whereas in C++, C Sharp, Java, you have to pay the cost of inheritance to get the flexibility of polymorphism.
All right, thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah.
So, your argument is actually in favor of dynamic typing.
In that case, yes.
And so, is there a bad side to that?
Well,
is there a negative? Because I think we've just looked at one of the ways in which this...
We haven't really hit the runtime issue, the runtime error issue. Uh-huh. Because if I am a static program, let's say I'm working on a mission-critical system where lives are at stake, aeronautic software or avionics software, right? And, you know, I'm going to use every tool I can. I'm going to have static type checking up the wazoo just because I don't ever want to kill a plane load of people because I forgot a type.
I think you bring up a really good point. So, actually, you bring up 2 points. Static type checking, I'll just call it that. I know that bothers me. Static type checking prevents this error of using the wrong types at the wrong times, or the right types at the wrong times, right? So that's one type of error. And a fairly common point in its favor is that this prevents a class of bugs, like you were talking about. But if you were really doing mission-critical or, you know, life-critical kind of software, you would never stop with that being the amount of testing that you do. So there you're letting the compiler test for you, and you're saying it's going to catch one type of error. So what I would say is, in context, the techniques that you use to create high-quality software are the same in both environments. And in the context of creating software that might result in someone dying if it malfunctions, then maybe dynamic typing isn't actually the right thing to choose. It may be that static typing, and this kind of explicit sort of typing, actually, even if it only prevents 1% of bugs, it's probably worth it to go that extra mile if you're building a space shuttle or something like that. But I would say that that's, you know, a very small percentage of software products and projects in the scope of everything that we're using object-oriented programming languages to do anyway.
Okay, so now I'm gonna flip this on you. Do you practice test-driven development?
I do.
Does your test-driven development give you close to 100% code coverage?
Yes.
And we're talking about Ruby now, right? So you are using RSpec or TestUnit or something like that to give you extremely high code coverage. Does that find, do those tests find the kinds of errors that a static type checker would find?
They do.
They do. So if you are practicing test-driven development, is it true, in your experience, that the benefit of static typing is diminished?
Yeah, I would say that not only is it diminished, but it actually works against you when you're practicing test-driven development. And the reason for that is dynamic typing gives you a high amount of flexibility. Like we were talking about, polymorphism being tied to inheritance hierarchies in the static world. In the dynamic world, to adhere to an interface, you just have to support the protocols of that interface, which is an abstract concept. It means if I send a message to an object, it should implement that message and respond somehow that makes sense, right? So as you're evolving code and using a test-driven development process, you actually have to go through a lot of different kind of scaffolding set up, non-value-added activities that take your mind off of the development process while you're doing static typing and test-driven development versus dynamic environments where you can completely defer the creation of certain things until the time in which it makes sense. So it's a lot easier to do things like mock objects out when you're test driving your code, or just to very, very partially implement something and, you know, plug in a stub at some point while you're doing test-driven development in a dynamic world without having to do things like create an interface that's static that everything implements, when the only reason for doing that is so that you can swap it out for testing it.
So the dynamic nature of languages like Ruby or maybe Python or maybe even Smalltalk makes it much easier to write tests, increases your test coverage a great deal, and mitigates the problem of the loss of this static type checking. So let's move on to a different issue. IDEs have gotten really, really smart. And you look around at Eclipse, you look around at IntelliJ, Visual Studio with some of the add-ons like ReSharper is pretty good as well. And then they have the ability to do IntelliSense and refactoring, really interesting refactorings. And then you look at the Ruby community and the Ruby environment, and you don't see that kind of power. First of all, I think that's related to static typing. Do you agree with that?
I believe that in the implementations of the languages that you're talking about, it's related to static typing, but I don't think it's a type static versus dynamic issue. I think it's a runtime issue. Because having looked at Smalltalk quite a bit yourself, I'm sure you know that best tools are in Smalltalk environments usually. And that's where refactoring browsers came from. Smalltalk is dynamically typed, but it has a very powerful introspective runtime. And so it's not true to say that in dynamically typed languages you can't have that kind of support. But it is true to say that currently in the implementations of the runtimes for some of the popular languages, such as Ruby, it's a little bit harder to do that support, or actually a lot harder to build that kind of support in. It's not to say that it's impossible. Through projects such as JRuby, where you have an AST from compiled piece of source available.
What's
to
an AST? Oh, an abstract syntax.
Abstract syntax. You're able to actually do things like parse code as someone is typing and do all sorts of things, including class inference or type inference at kind of the static analysis phase. So right now the state of the art is not so great in Ruby land. I think that's partially because Ruby developers have not been aching for IDEs over the years. Where now we have this huge influx of Java programmers and C-sharp programmers who are used to having really powerful IDEs and they miss them.
So let me get really specific. I would like to do a rename. No, let me do IntelliSense first. I would like to call a method. So I've got this function in Ruby and it takes an argument O. And of course the argument has no type. But I know what type it is.
Right.
I know what type this object is, or at least I think I do, because I'm going to call a method on it. I can't remember the name of the method. So what I'd like to do is type dot and then hit control space and see all the possible methods available to me. Is there even a feasible way to do that in Ruby?
There is currently a feasible way to do that with some level of error. So the answer is kinda. I think the kinda ends up being good enough for most people. And if you look at like the latest work on NetBeans, there's really powerful Ruby support built into that with this sort of IntelliSense completion. So it's currently kind of possible. And with future runtimes, such as JRuby, of course, developing at a rapid pace, and runtimes like Rubinius, which is a native kind of full replacement for the C implementation of Ruby, it should be possible to fully support that kind of stuff in the same way that it is in Java.
Okay. Now, you and I have had this discussion before, very briefly. I'm going to give you the opportunity to convince me why I should use TextMate instead of some powerful or quasi-powerful Ruby IDE.
All right.
I saw you give a whole presentation today in TextMate.
Right. I used it.
It was all your slides. It was everything.
Right.
Okay, so
I'm actually not a TextMate bigot. TextMate is a Mac editor, and it happens to have been written with input by the guy who made Rails. So Ruby is very much a first-class citizen in TextMate. Maybe the question is, why should you use just a text editor instead of an IDE?
Yes. Mm-hmm. How do I get my refactorings, or do I need them? How do I get my IntelliSense, or do I need them?
Right. So I've been doing Ruby for 7 years. And I haven't needed them. I don't know why that is, though. But I think partially it's because it's almost like not having an IDE that's this powerful, in the same way that not having static typing is actually a constraint that drives you to make different decisions in the design of your software. So I'm actually going to not answer your question for a second because I want to take it back to static typing for a moment. The method signatures on statically typed languages. You know, I used to tell people in Java land when you, and it would be the same for C#, when you define a method in Java, you have in that one method definition something like 7 chances to communicate something about that method. You know, you have the return type, the name of the method, the types and names of the parameters, the exceptions that are thrown, and the types of those. You have all these things that can communicate to a reader or user of that method what that thing is supposed to do and how it's supposed to behave. In Ruby, you don't have that. And in dynamic languages, you generally don't have that. So my response, and the response of others that I respect in the dynamic world, is, for example, I don't know the type of a parameter that's going to come in. So if I had to follow that for 100 lines and try and figure out what it was, it would be pretty hard. So what I do is I go to very great pains to make my method names really communicate intent so that it would be obvious to some level what the parameters would be. And then I tend to make methods that are almost as short as the combined code of the average Java method signature without any implementation. So it ends up not actually being harder to follow what's going on as a result. So the same thing carries through to when you're dealing with IDEs, I think, and when you're dealing with refactorings. And maybe the reason that I have never felt like I want a rename refactoring in Ruby is because of a rename method, for example, is because it's easy enough for me with my test harness, which I always have, and my small, hopefully well-decomposed methods and well-named, it's easy enough for me to change the code without it being brittle. I'm also not stuck in this static world that won't compile, so it's easy to do things like put a shim in if you need to and, you know, make things work temporarily so that you can go through the red-green refactor thing a little more easily.
So actually you just answered the third question I was going to ask you, which was that static typing provides a level of documentation that describes the software in a very nice way, and with dynamic typing, you lose that. You lose the types of the incoming arguments, the return type, the exception types. Why don't you comment on that just one more time? But I think you already answered it.
Yeah, I think the core of the answer is that ends up being a constraint that, if you embrace it correctly, drives better code and drives better designs. So to say that the static typing information, that metadata, helps document your code is absolutely true. You can't refute that. But if you realize that you're missing that, it drives you to better decisions. And my experience is in the static type systems that I've worked on, it's almost like that method definition creates a big iron door with a big sign that describes what it does. And then it feels okay to put a whole lot of stuff behind that door, you know, a big, long black box of stuff. And people don't tend to decompose things as well that way.
Ward Cunningham once told me that small talk failed because it was so easy to make a mess. And then he turned to the Java programmers and the C++ programmers, and he said, "You guys have it easy, because when you start making a mess, your language punishes you." In the case of C++, we have build times that go incredible. In the case of Java, we get tangled static typing structures and unpredictable builds. What is it about Ruby, this new wave of dynamic typing that seems to be sweeping, what is it about that is going to avoid Ward's prediction?
Well, I think it's wrong to call Ruby next or new in relation to Smalltalk. It happens to be newer than Smalltalk, but to call it next wouldn't be appropriate, because Smalltalk, in many ways, at least in terms of the implementations of Smalltalk that are available, Smalltalk is still quite far ahead of Ruby. So one of the key factors that makes Smalltalk so far ahead of Ruby, in my opinion, is the fact that it's image-based. And that means you basically have memory of a given Smalltalk system can be serialized and saved and reloaded, and that's actually how you deploy things. You deploy the memory of an entire system. Ruby doesn't have that, which makes it harder to do things like the IDE and all that. It also makes it easier for normal people to grok because it's all files and stuff they're used to dealing with. But I would say, kind of in a minor way, that the fact that Ruby is not image-based creates, at least the messes have to be more explicit if you're going to make them. So to pull in code that modifies your core system, you actually have to require stuff.
Yes.
You know, there has to be something somewhere that goes and gets that code and loads it. So I think the messes from Smalltalk are probably largely because of the images and the fact that you just give someone, here's everything I might have changed. I might have changed the way numbers work, but it's really hard to sort through an image and find that out.
Although you'll find that in Ruby as well. It's difficult sometimes to find when someone has opened up a class like FixNum and added some strange operator to it.
Yeah,
at least, though, it is in the source chain somewhere.
Right.
It's not buried in the image. Okay, one last question from me. And this is just an observation. Do you believe that test-driven development has made greater inroads in the dynamic community, the Ruby and the Rails community, than it has in the static typing, the Java, C-sharp community?
Yes, I do. In fact, it was interesting when my first exposure to the dynamic languages was with Ruby, and it was around the time that extreme programming really hit, and I co-organized RubyConf 2001, which was the first international Ruby conference, and we had, I don't know, five founding signatories of the Agile Alliance there. For some reason, you weren't there. I don't know why. One of your employees was. And I noticed that Ruby was popping up on all the XP mailing lists, and XP was popping up on the Ruby mailing list, and there's something that it's almost like there is a philosophical kinship between what it means to be of the dynamic typing mindset and of the agile process mindset. Kind of abstract. I mean, you could spend a lot of time talking about that. So from the start, Ruby attracted those people. It might be partially because of Dave and Andy, Dave Thomas and Andy Hunt, pragmatic programmer, also co-authors of the Agile Manifesto, publishing the first English language book on Ruby, that we just drew that kind of community in. We've had a test framework that ships with the core distribution of Ruby forever now. You know? So you don't have to go download a JUnit or an NUnit or something like that to do test-driven development. It's just there. So it's become kind of part of the Ruby open source process that if you're going to contribute to software, you have to contribute tests that go with the implementation.
We've had a question from the audience. Hold it up, because it's obviously a significant one, and I forgot all about it.
Right.
Would you like to comment on that?
I would not.
Why not?
I think the audience should comment on their own question.
Fair enough. So that means the audience, who are also some famous people, are going to have to get involved here. But it does bring up the interesting question, because all the stuff that's been talked about so far about the power of dynamic languages and things being taken care of at runtime can't come for free. It cannot happen for free, right? So it's performance. Let's talk about performance. What do you mean? Why did you write that on that piece of paper? Clearly there's a price we have to pay.
Right. I mean, I identify that performance is one of the things that you can get in statically typed languages, like you can get IntelliSense and all those things where static analysis will allow you to determine all kinds of things that the compiler can use to optimize what it compiles down to.
Yes.
I'm actually very uninterested in performance. As long as performance is acceptable, I'm mostly satisfied. And when it gets to the final hour and it's time to actually identify what the performance problems may be, I'll focus on it and fix those. But I'm far more interested in having really expressive, really clean interfaces. And
a lot of people agree with you.
Yeah, I guess so.
So I was actually interested to hear what Chad's answer would be to that, since I don't actually believe that it's worth it to say, I want to have a statically typed language just so it'll be faster.
Okay.
But is it, let me ask you that, though. I mean, that's not really all a compiler gives you, right? A compiler gives you more than just increasing performance of what's going to happen when the code is executed. It does other interesting things. If you look at the C++ compiler, I mean, you have the front end and you have the back end. There's a ton of IQ and interesting stuff going on in the back end. Now, at a runtime compilation, obviously it's also compiled, but isn't that more like a JIT? Can you talk a little bit about that? Or first, why don't you explain, there's two things actually. Who are you?
Oh, I'm Marcel Lehman. I'm involved in the Ruby community, and I believe in dynamic languages.
Outstanding. But you probably also have used a static one once in a while.
Yeah. I would just, one last thing about the performance thing is, although I'm a fan of dynamic languages, I think languages that have type inference are pretty interesting because they abstract away all the details of getting statically typed systems by having the responsibility of that be on the part of the language implementers, not the people who use the language.
Mm-hmm.
And so in certain situations where you're clearly writing code that according to what you've defined so far would be impossible, the language will go, what you're trying to do is impossible because I know this about what you've already written. Mm-hmm. Even though you haven't explicitly said, this is going to be a list and this is going to be a number, it can figure those kinds of things out most of the time, enough of the time. And so you get performance and type safety for free without having to have the burden of thinking constantly in terms of types having that littered all over your code.
So what would that be called? I mean, it's not purely dynamic.
It's a statically typed language, but the type system uses type inference.
Okay.
I think Chad choosing to use the word, I forget the word that he was using, but making a distinction between
explicit class checking.
Okay.
This is where my eyes kind of glaze over, because there's all these categories of typing and dynamic typing and static typing. And in the world of the professional software developer, there's really only static typing. And just beginning to get some dynamic typing. The Ruby and Rails wave has kind of raised the awareness of the run-of-the-mill programmer that maybe there's something else out there. And these guys don't know about Haskell or ML or anything. But now they've heard of Ruby or Python, and that's interesting.
And I was just going to add to that, I'm Rich Kilmer.
Hello.
I've been static language free for 7 years.
My goodness.
Anyway, sorry. But I did do an awful lot of Java development and have done some C# development. So, But I think that, you know, performance is also a runtime issue. And, I think...
Is it anything else?
No. But I'm
sorry,
saying...
Sorry.
No, I'm saying it's easy. Right. So, I mean, if you look at Ruby's performance, as Marcel has said, the performance is good enough for the things that it's doing right now. But... Smalltalk can perform very, very well. And it can perform well because the runtimes have evolved this need to actually have more and more performant systems. And internally, they've created structures that have allowed them to be very performant, even with dynamic typing. So I don't think that you can only build performant systems as long as you statically type everything. I think the dynamic languages can actually be very fast, too. That's all runtime support. So as Microsoft is building Iron Ruby, we're expecting it to be a very fast runtime for Ruby.
Sure.
But it's still a dynamically typed system. We're not going to give up that nature of it simply to be able to run on Microsoft's infrastructure.
So Microsoft's making Iron Ruby.
Right. As you know, Sun and the community is working on JRuby. As a matter of fact, Microsoft is doing this in an open source environment, which is very nice.
Yeah.
Iron Ruby. And it's going to be running in the browser, which is kind of cool.
And so JRuby is open source, too, isn't it?
It is. No, yeah. I say it's a community. These are all very open community processes, which is really great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, there's a lot of people in the community that are going to be able to work on those performance of those runtimes.
Sure.
And, I think the performance is definitely something which... is appropriate when it's appropriate.
Yeah.
But we don't try and build our code to be the most performant thing up front. We're trying to build it to be right.
Java used to be really slow.
Right, absolutely.
And now we don't care at all because it's the jitting compilers have gotten to the point where they're blazing fast. And as the Ruby community grows and demands more performance, that performance is going to come. So I don't think that's a fear. Even now, though, Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull some numbers out of an orifice. 95% of the code you write is not performance intensive.
Right.
It's only 5% that really needs to execute fast. So if you have to, you write that in Java or C or some other language. And the rest of the code can all be written in a dynamic language, and it's not going to harm performance in the slightest.
Mm-hmm.
So even now, even with Ruby not being highly performant, there are good options.
And so one of the things that we were talking about earlier off camera was the notion of when would it be appropriate to use a statically typed language versus... I mean, and I had asked specifically, how is Ruby being used? Is it being used mainly in web server environments? I mean, it's something that... Send it down to a web... I mean, the internet is huge now, right? The web 2.0. Everyone's now targeting the internet. Microsoft is turning the battleship towards the internet. So it's like... I mean, let's talk about that. Can I just say I don't ever want to use a static language again and still be a general-purpose programmer writing client applications that people are going to buy?
I'm beginning to wonder if the last... What is it now, 20 years? 87? Yeah, close to 20, 25 years have been dominated by the strategy of static typing. I'm beginning to wonder if that's not a failed strategy.
Interesting.
In my opinion, the next few years are going to see a really big increase in dynamic languages.
I think what your question is actually kind of wrong by itself. In that...
Again?
Again, I'm sorry.
No problem.
The reason not to use, for example, Ruby on the client mm-hmm. is completely unrelated to whether it's static or dynamic.
Sure, of course.
It's the runtime and the integration with the native widgets and all that sort of stuff. So at the time that Iron Ruby is in production, I think Ruby is going to be an excellent choice for building desktop applications. But, you know, they have to solve all the problems of how you distribute Ruby applications in the context of a .NET Windows application and do all the integration with the native widgets on the platform. And there just hasn't been a lot of focus on that yet.
Okay, so perhaps the question was wrong without any context. So one of the big topics that we haven't addressed really is security. You have to agree that in a strongly typed system, a verifiable system, it's secure, right? So in C++ or C, you can just overwrite anything can be anything, right? You can just overwrite any chunk of memory with any type. Nothing's really protected.
Right.
We tried to address that with adding, you know, more out in C++ now, especially out in .NET, and you have that in Java. So understand, I'm not a Ruby developer. I've never programmed in it, so it's a naive question. But are there any security things that we should discuss?
Like, well, a naive sliver of an answer to that question
uh-huh.
is that you can't say strong versus dynamic, because those are not the same issues. So C is weakly typed. You
yes.
can overwrite sections of memory. You can say, here's a variable, put whatever you want in the place that that variable makes up.
Uh-huh.
Ruby is strongly typed, but dynamically typed. Java is strongly typed, but statically typed, right?
Mm.
So the security around not being able to corrupt memory is actually present in pretty much all of the dynamically typed languages that are popular that I can think of.
So. Yeah, I don't think there's a way to load a stream of bytes into a buffer and jump to it.
Right.
In Ruby, and that's, you know, the real issue.
Excellent. And so do you see that, so with C# 3.0, for example, they've added more functional constructs, right? That's how Link was able to be created, right? Lambda expressions. If you use the var keyword, actually you're going to get type inference. What do you think about that? The direction of taking a language like C#, which is this traditional statically typed imperative language, throwing in a little more functional.
Yeah, I'm about as excited about that as I am about Fortran 97. Yeah.
Really, why All is
right.
that?
By the time Fortran, what was it, Fortran 97 or 95? When by the time that came out, you know, I was somewhere completely different, and those changes were made for a cohort of programmers who were using an older technology. I look at the stuff happening in Java at the moment and the stuff happening in C# at the moment, and I wonder if it's relevant. Because I think the real stuff is happening in the Ruby community, maybe even in the Python community. And that's the way software has always been. The real stuff, the relevant stuff, happens outside the big corporations.
Yes.
And usually from some grassroots level. And you can take a look at all of the revolutions that have occurred. The C language, the C++ language, even Java started that way as kind of a backdoor project. Mm-hmm. The Unix operating system, backdoor project. Our industry is dominated by these happy accidents. And I'm wondering if we're not in the middle of one of those revolutions right now.
Excellent. Well, on that note, thank you for your time. It's been great to meet you.
Thanks. Thanks for not actually arguing with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been
nice. I couldn't do it.
You're a closet dynamic. And great to meet you as well. And enjoy the rest of the conference and your speaking.
Bye.